it's having good leadership in a work environment. You know, if you have a good leader, someone that can inspire you, someone that can make you feel like you're part of the process and you're adding value as opposed to just being a factory worker and just kind of pushing on with the process. No, I definitely understand that. Did your parents kind of fall into this business, or was it something that was inherited from their parents, your grandparents?
Yeah, so the textile clothing manufacturing company was, so they started, so back in Vietnam, back in the 70s, 80s, so everyone can kind of operate a small place, like a small like factory, so to speak, like 8 to 10 people. And then I guess they built up from there. When people were still getting like, so in Vietnam back then, it's really poor, just to set the scene. A lot of these companies would go to like places where they get smaller pieces of clothing, and then they would put them together to produce like a t-shirt or whatever. But at that time, my parents were like, they were not thinking at the small scale like that, I guess. So they were going out and not getting those kind of pieces of clothing by themselves, but paying other people to kind of do that. And then scaling it up from there. So the clothing company, they kind of build it from the ground up.
So they're self-made. Okay, that's really interesting, because I was just trying to get my head around how does one fall into a clothing manufacturing kind of business and then take those transferable skills onto creating jewelry and, you know, custom pieces and what have you.
Well, it's not dissimilar to like being proficient developer and then moving, and then in, moving into coffee and doing both at the same time. I guess a question before we move on from the Vietnam sort of stuff, the parent stuff, is were you there for I guess any of these developments in the business, and did you sort of see firsthand, like were you part of the business at all, or
Well, when they had the clothing company, I was really young. I kind of see saw the scale of the factory that they built. So I was amazed on, you know, like at that time, I think I was too young to kind of understand like the effort that they put into the company. But now looking back, I think what they did was like amazing. I don't think I could do it.
You know, I mean, how big is the company? Give us a bit of a scale.
So at the height of the clothing company, so they had about 300 to 400 workers. And then they had this factory where it's around 1,000 meters square and five levels up. So that, because they were exporting like a mass scale to overseas, so they need all that space to kind of store that. Sorry, like thinking about it now, like what they did was I think amazing for their time. So yeah, so that's kind of what I aspire to be.
Which is great. Also, not to be stereotypical, but most people that we've spoken to who have very successful parents that have done a certain piece of business for quite some years, their kids, they've always kind of manipulated or tried to have their kids work in the family business. Has that been your case as well?
Yes and no. I think my parents, especially my mom, is really understanding when she sees that I'm not, at that time, was not interested in the like the way you know, she runs the company and stuff. She allows me to pursue my own interests, which is software engineering, which I'm really grateful for, because I could a lot of my friends fall into that trap where they couldn't go, you know, learn and do what they wanted to
explore.
But now I wish, by understanding what I understand now, I wish I kind of did a bit of both. So kind of grow as a person.
I mean, it's not too late to go back and take a year out and you know, help out your parents and
definitely. And like how you're sort of mentioning, looking for those opportunities between the sort of business and systems world and engineering, and how you can sort of bridge the two. I guess with that in mind, have you found any opportunities in that sort of space?
Definitely. So recently I just went back to Vietnam to kind of help them with like their business.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of opportunities where software can, you know, help the process much better. Mm. And these are the kind of opportunities that as an engineer I love because I love solving problems.
Mm.
Like there could be inconsistencies in the reports, for example, where they were using Excel sheets a lot of the times.
Okay.
So there must be some software or, you know, some kind of custom solution
to automate it.
It to make sure that you know, that the report always come out close to perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that one of the main problems you kind of went back to streamline and solve, or were there other things?
So that is the main problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I bring to kind of to help them a bit is because they come from grassroots, like figure it out as they go.
Mm-hmm. Do-it-yourself type people.
Yeah, and it was a long time ago as well. So a lot of the things that they were lacking is the appreciation of how software can make a process much better.
Mm-hmm.
Coming firsthand from a software engineering background, that is something I could, if someone gives me a product,
mm-hmm.
especially web app,
mm-hmm.
where, and then they say, this web app will do, you know, solve all your problem.
Yeah.
I can be the one that say, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Or
okay.
yes, it does.
Okay.
And I can be the one that negotiate all the pricing for them to make sure that, you know, they have the best, you know, software for their company.
Okay. How did you fall into software engineering? Problem solving is a keyword that keeps coming up. But as a youngster, you don't just go, cool, I want to solve problems using software engineering. So what kind of got you into that? What was the passion or the motivation behind it?
Yeah, so I guess it was gaming.
Gaming?
I used to play a lot of games, like video games.
What were you playing? What was the game at the time?
Oof, it was Dota.
Oh yeah,
Dota. Okay. Like the original Dota, not the Dota 2 that everyone's playing these days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And a lot of MMOs.
What's like, MMOs?
MMOs are massively online something. Okay. But basically you go online and you play with like other people.
Oh, it's like LAN, like Counter-Strike and those types of
More like World of Warcraft.
Oh, kind
of
yes.
Like League of Legends type thing?
League of Legends is like Dota as well.
Yeah,
I love those. Like just like playing with other people online. So that's what I guess got me really attached to
computers.
Cool. So how did that sort of connection come from, like, from playing the games to then thinking I can do this myself, sort of thing? Like, how did that sort of happen?
Yeah. So after I finished high school, I thought, if I did anything, it must be related to computer, right? So I went enrolled in computer science. Bachelor,
mm-hmm.
To be honest, like at first it didn't. Like I thought it would be similar, you know, we're building games and stuff. But actually, what got like the first 2 years of uni, I did terribly.
Was that back in Vietnam or here in Australia?
Here. Okay. In Australia,
sure. So you came to Australia to study?
Yeah, I came to Australia when I was in year 9.
Okay, what year would that have been?
Sorry?
What year would that have been?
2002.
Okay. Did you move here with your immediate family or?
My brother moved here before me.
Okay.
1 year before, and then I follow his footsteps.
Yeah.
Also because my parents thought the education system in Vietnam is like useless.
Yeah.
So they just sent me here and I'm grateful for that because, yeah, I learned so much more here.
Awesome.
What was it like, just quick little questions, what was that transition like coming to Australia in that sort of age range, like in year nine? Like, how was that transition into school from what you were used to, like schooling-wise?
Yeah, interesting. In Vietnam, so we had to learn about 13 subjects.
Yeah.
In 1 year, like the whole year.
Wow.
Compared to here, it's like probably like six.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Yeah. So that was a big difference. Mm-hmm. And then in Vietnam, I used to go to class from 7 a.m., finish at around 5 p.m. That's the normal class.
Whoa.
And then I would go to some extra cramp classes.
Hold on, you said from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. that's a class, or that's just a school?
No, that's school.
Okay. I was going to confirm that because I was like, whoa.
Yeah, so that's normal schooling.
Yeah.
And then I would go from 5 to probably 9 or 10.
Sure.
For extra classes.
Wow. But it kind of makes sense then, thinking about your original hustle of Gloria Jeans and work. That would have set you up for that, as in the mentality of being able to work those long hours and stuff like that.
I never really actually think about that. I thought it was normal hour for me.
Yeah.
So when people actually say that's crazy hour, I'm like, no, it's not.
Mm.
Yeah. So I thought, that's an interesting.
Well, I feel exactly the same. People say that to me as well, like crazy hours. But to me, it's just like, I don't know. I do like 7 till 12.
Yeah.
And that's just like.
That's cool. Very interesting. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it gets easier if you like really into it.
I guess, totally.
Which is, it makes it much easier.